call the State Government Finance Committee to order. And first, I just want to say thank you to everyone that came here today. My name is Sarah Anderson. I'm the Chair of the State Government Finance Committee. One of our accounts that we are responsible for is for Veterans Affairs funding. So before I get into the weeds of that, I do have with me Representative John Petersburg, who represents this area, and Representative Brian Daniels. If you guys want to start off by saying something, and I forgot to use the microphone, so don't worry about that. And is it working now?
That microphone isn't working at all.
It doesn't at all. Okay. So we just got to speak loud?
It works.
She has to be close to a little bit.
Okay.
Does this work? Can you hear me? Okay, good. Really close, you said? Okay, all right. So we'll move it close.
As Sarah Anderson said, I am the representative of the downtown Wausau area, and I do want to thank everybody for showing up on a cold day on Ash Wednesday, beginning of Lent. And I hope that all of you will have some opportunity to address any concerns that you have and to learn more about what we do up at State Government Finance. The committee is very interested in our veterans and how we can help with whatever issues that are out there, and we'll do whatever we can.
Thank you. This is Representative Daniels. I'm from the Faribault, Morristown area. And thank you all again for coming. That's really nice you come out and be a part of this. We're on a fact-finding mission to see what needs are out there, what we can do to help. And like John said, we'll certainly do everything we can to make sure that things are being treated fairly. And thanks again for coming.
And what we're going to do here is I'd like to have all the other members of the committee introduce themselves, tell us where they're from. I neglected to mention I'm from the Plymouth area, which is a western suburb. And then I also neglected to mention that John is a member of the State Government Finance Committee, too. So he's been very helpful to us in his input and his accounting background. So that's been very appreciated. So Representative Albright, if you can start us off.
Tony Albright, and I represent the Prior Lake and Jordan areas of Scott County.
I'm Jim Nash. I represent District 47A, which is Carver County, and I wanted to say thank you all for your service.
Mark Anderson. I represent District 9A, which is Cass, Wadena, and Todd County up in central Minnesota.
Good afternoon. I'm Linda Rudbeck from Circle Pines, Minnesota, and that's District 38A. And happy to be here. I'm married to a Vietnam vet, so perhaps some closeness to the issues, too.
I'm State Representative Bob Detmer. I chair the Veterans Division at the Capitol and what reports to the State Government Finance Committee. I also co-chair the MAG Military Action Group, which is a think tank for military issues. And I'm a 25-year Army veteran. Now, how many Army guys we got in here? Navy?
Yeah.
Air Force? Marine? Coast Guard? Okay. Thank you for coming.
Good afternoon. My name is Cindy Pugh. I'm a second-term state representative from Chanhassen, which is Carver County. And I represent also most of the cities around the west, south, and east side of Lake Minnetonka. I serve on not only the State Government Finance Committee, but on the Veterans Division as well, and it's an honor and a privilege to serve there, and so great to be here. Thank you for being here also.
My name is Jen Schultz, and I represent Duluth. My father was a Vietnam vet. He was in the Air Force. And unfortunately, I've never had a desire to serve in the Air Force, but I have a lot of respect for those that do, and hopefully you guys can tell us today what issues you're facing and we can help resolve those issues.
Good afternoon and welcome. My name is Representative Bob Lunan, and I come from the northern end of Scott County in the Shakopee area. My father, too, was a vet, and I look forward to the opportunity getting direct feedback from you on some of the issues you're facing and what we can do to make things better.
We are going to have a presentation. Helen Roberts is our fiscal analyst. She's nonpartisan staff, and I asked her to put together some numbers of what the funding has been for Veterans Affairs over the last few years. And those are the documents that you have before you. And there's a few caveats that she will explain to you so you have a better understanding of why the numbers are the way that they are. So she's going to start us off with that. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that my vice chair is also a military veteran. He's been a valuable member of our committee, as has Representative Detmer, and his experience is chairing the Vets Division too. So we have some real experts on this committee, people that have experienced it. Of course, we have Representative Albright. He has a son that's in the Marines right now. So we are very concerned about veteran issues. And with that, Ms. Roberts is going to go over some numbers. So she'll kick you off here.
Madam Chair, members, and members of the audience, there's two charts before you. You have two charts before you that reflect really the same information. One has a little more detailed breakdown. And to start with the bar chart, at first I apologize for the copying does not reflect the difference between the two major programs in the Department of Veterans Affairs. So the bar chart should be divided into two colors, but it just didn't come across. So what these charts represent are the general fund appropriations that the state made to the Department of Veterans Affairs. So that's really to show what the state contribution is to the department. As you probably know, there are other sources of funds, primarily federal funds that go for both for construction and operations at the veterans' home. But this chart is focusing on the state contributions. And so you can see that over the past period of time since fiscal year 2005 that state spending for the Veterans Department has increased each year. The one place where it might look like it didn't, and that's what the second chart is to show, is when you look at fiscal year 2012, it appears like there was maybe a reduction in the state contribution. But what happened is in the prior two biennials, and I know this is getting really kind of in the weeds of how we budget at the state, but the two previous legislatures had made several choices to make funding increases one time. And so that funding sort of dropped off in fiscal year 12. But the funding, the 2011 legislature then did other increases to the department. And I guess I should point out maybe the last two bienniums, because there were some significant increases in funding for the department. In this last session, the fiscal year, or in the 2015 session, there was a $17.3 million increase. And this was primarily all for the department's veterans' homes. And so the department came to the legislature and came to the governor and said that they were really facing some issues with covering compensation costs and covering operations at the homes. And so this was an increase that was approved in the last session. Some other increases that happened in the session prior to that, in the 2013 session, that might be of note, where there were increases that were made for the operating costs for the new cemetery in Gilmore County. So the legislature approved funding for that. There was a permanent funding made for the honor guards at veterans' funerals, so that was one of the things that had been one time before, and that legislature has now made that permanent. And then there were increases to the county veteran service officers grants. So those were some of the significant funding changes that have happened in recent years. So that's a really high-level overview. If members have any questions, I can address them.
That'd be great. And members, at this point, do any of you have any questions at all? Representative Albright. And speak up, please.
In fiscal year 2009, I just note that there is a substantial increase in programs and services. And I'm just curious, it's probably been explained to me a number of times, but if you could just once again reaffirm what that was about.
Madam Chair, Representative Albright, when I put this chart together, I had to really focus on those years because the department was actually in a separate committee during those years, so it took a while to unravel it. But what's happening here is you'll note on the line that says GI Bill Education Grants, the $5.8 million. That program, when it was first started, the legislature set aside $6 million per year because that's what they thought was going to be used. Well, it turns out that the usage has never met that level, and I think it's primarily because soldiers are using federal benefits first. And so the legislature had appropriated $6 million that year and canceled part of it, but we still are counting the $5.8 million because that's what was appropriated. And then you'll see in the later years, the number goes down significantly because we changed the funding to actually meet what was needed.
Representative Albright.
I'm just wondering if maybe, I saw Representative Detmer kind of nodding. Any comments to that change or the influx, or is it a non-usage or is it an overusage, an over need that we're experiencing?
Madam Chair, Representative. It wasn't used. So the Veterans Division at one time, Veterans Affairs was under the Ag Department, I think agriculture, wasn't it?
Members, it was in a separate committee only agriculture and veterans affairs.
That's right. And now we're under the state government finance. But that part, that money for the college funds was underused. So that's why they took it out.
Thank you, for sure.
Members, any other questions at this point? Anyone from the public that wants to ask questions about the financial side of it? And then one of the other things that we have been doing in the bill that we passed last session, we put in a piece of legislation asking the legislative auditor, which is a nonpartisan office, to look at our veteran homes funding and to see if we are where we're at in that process and making sure that we are don't face a similar situation from what you saw on the federal level. And so I know many of you have know individuals that have maybe used those services and just wanted to open it up. If you have feedback on the veteran homes or just veteran services in general, we would be happy to take any input that you have on that too. So I don't know if members have any comments or questions to that on that point at all. Otherwise, I will open it up to the folks that have been gracious enough to attend here today. So,
Madam Chair.
Representative Detmer.
We also have a Benjamin Johnson here. It's from the department. Commissioner Shelato, I always say General. Commissioner Shelato's office. So he is here, too, to take in this meeting today. So he's the new legislative liaison that's going to be working with us.
Very good. We appreciate you being here today. And I imagine you'll be helping out the legislative auditor when he does his review of them too. Great. Anybody wish to comment on services at all? Okay. Sure.
I've got a question for you.
And if you could do me one favor, we do have this part of our record. It's an official meeting, so if you can just state your name for the record, and that's all you got to do.
Don Lutchman, Seaman. U.S. Infantry retired. I'm sure some of you may be familiar with Scott Mills. Scott is the Veterans Affairs Director for Veterans Employment in this region here. And I've known Scott for quite a few years. A couple of times we touched base and worked together. And I'm just curious, does the state have anything going right now along the lines of what federally, if a young troop comes out and he goes to get hired, there are certain programs where they will pay the employer federally X amount of dollars for like 2 years or however it is, it matches up and out of time. So one, I was curious if they had anything along that from the state for the employers. And also, is there a particular section assigned to educating the employers and carriers of what, you know, their advantages for them of taking these young troops on. And the older ones, too, because, you know, you also got to look at it from the point of view that, okay, I rolled in the dike down here after working for railroads for a long time. And so I come with my own health care. That's a huge advantage for any employer. When you walk in, they say, well, you know, you start discussing salary or whatnot, negotiating. You can say, I'm already taken care of, so where do you start? So those are my questions about that.
And Representative Detmer has worked on this issue. Representative Detmer, you want to speak to that?
Yes, Madam Chair. And, sir, we have some legislation, and we've been trying to get into the tax bill where an employer would be get a tax credit for hiring a veteran. And if a veteran is disabled, a certain percentage of disability, and even get more for hiring that veteran. So this is something we've been working on for probably 4 years now. It's been legislation through. So that's one thing, and obviously another thing that's in the tax bill right now is to eliminate the tax on a veteran's retirement pay. There's only 5 states that still have that tax, and Iowa just got rid of that tax a section ago. Wisconsin doesn't have that tax. South Dakota, of course, doesn't have income tax. So that's something we've been working on. I've been working on that for 10 years now. So. It's in the tax bill. If we can get the tax bill through, I think the governor will sign it. He will not line item that out of the tax bill. So,
how many veterans does that?
Representative Schultz.
Thanks, Senator. How many veterans does that
mean? I don't have those numbers in front of me right now. I think in Minnesota. Retired. Now we're talking about retired veterans. There's 370,000 veterans that live in Minnesota, but retired veterans, I don't have that number in front of me.
And if you could state your name for the record.
Benjamin Johnson, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I don't have those numbers in front of me, but I can certainly provide them. Happy to.
And Dave?
Madam Chairman, Dave Gould, the post commander here at the VLW. I just happened to have last year's Commander's Task Force bulletin open.
Good.
There are 18,368. Military retirees in Minnesota.
Okay.
That's the number would be effective.
Thank you.
Do they all get a pension?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do they all get a pension?
Yes, those are retired military veterans, so spent 20 years in the military and are drawing a pension from the U.S. military.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, that they're
Representative Detmer.
They're even 20 years or more or medically retired.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Any other questions from the public or comments at all? Did that answer your question? I should ask you that.
Yes, ma'am.
Anybody else?
Nigel Masek, not a veteran, but I'm always interested in veterans' issues. Now we got federal veterans funding, and we also have state. And the gentleman asked here a question, how well they mesh together. Are there other areas that we need to be making sure they mesh together? I mean, the federal and state veterans funding.
Representative Detmer, did you
want to
speak to that?
Madam Chair, another thing that we just passed this last session in terms of veterans-owned small businesses, if you're a veteran and you own 51% of your business, you can get certified. Before, you had to get certified through the federal VA to get certified as a veteran-owned small business so that you get when you put in bids for jobs, whether it's selling paper, pencils, or construction. And that was a very lengthy process of getting certified. And sometimes it took months to get certified. And now we've what we've been able to do now is that you can get certified right here in the state of Minnesota. What you need is your DD-214 and then proof that you have a major ownership of a company. And you can get certified going through the Department of Veterans Affairs and the Department of Administration. The Department of Administration will then certify you, and sometimes it will not only take a couple weeks to get certified. So that's something that we've been working together and try to do it within our own state.
Okay. My name is Christopher Hinton. I'm from Muskegon County. I have a couple of different things. First, has there been any talk or legislation on the Homestead Exclusion Act for widows or widowers that their spouse has now died, they're on fixed income. Has there been any talk about that, on how to get that passed?
Madam Chair.
Representative Detmer.
Yes, sir. We, when I first started in the legislature, the surviving spouse would get another 2 years of homestead credit. If you're 100%, if the military person is 100% disabled, up to $300,000 on a homestead, 70% would be up to $150,000. We raised that to 5 years a couple years ago, and then 4 years ago, and then 2 years ago we raised it up to 8 years. The current legislation that I have now that's in the tax bill would make it indefinite. As long as the spouse stays in that home, owns the home, or if she gets remarried or sells, it would go away.
The second thing I had.
Mr. Franklin. Go ahead. You're
fine. Christopher Hinton again. Is there any talk about having, there's lawyers out there that will help veterans get appeals done through the VA? How are they charged for that? What I would like to see is that they have to say, when they're giving their spiel to their veteran, that they can get this exact same service done for free if they go to a CVSO. I think that should be something they're required to say before they do their services, because I think sometimes they take advantage of that. Is there any talk about that, or?
Representative Detmer, is that something?
No, it hasn't come across my radar.
Okay.
It's something that could be brought to our attention. I know Mr. Cook over here is one of our researchers. You know, he could get the information from him. We can take a look at it. Yes. Now, we do have veterans courts. Certain counties have veterans courts now, and I just attended the veterans court in Hennepin County, and where veterans can, it's a special court for veterans that are, you know, having some problems after coming off active duty or coming out of the service, and helps them get their life squared away. And it's been very successful in some of these counties. I know Washington County, Ramsey County, there's I think 5 different counties that have veterans courts now. So it's a good operation.
I run the veterans court actually out of Brewer County.
Okay.
We have 10 counties. It's very good out there.
Yep.
But I'm biased.
And Representative Carlson, if you could introduce yourself, and I understand you have a comment too.
Sure, I'm sorry I'm a few minutes late. I had a meeting in St. Paul, so just got here. But I'm Lyndon Carlson, and I represent the Crystal New Hope part of Plymouth area. Happen to serve on the State Government Finance Committee, along with taxes and then ways and means. Just wanted to ask a question. This is a new issue for me in terms of the legal fees, and I was just wondering how big an issue it is, being that you're involved with it. I'm not totally new to the legislature, but I've never heard of that particular issue before.
Just to fill you in, Representative Carlson, you were elected in 1970?
72.
Oh,
so
it was
I'm
72.
In my 44th year, yeah.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that I've heard every issue that's not coming down the pike. So I was just curious how big a problem that is.
Mr. Brandon?
The disclosure.
Yeah, I don't believe that it's a very big problem. However, I think it's something that should be required. There should be an endorsement or a disclosure that says you can get these services for free if you want. Because say you have an elderly veteran that hasn't had a whole lot to do with the VA so far and is kind of fresh to this, maybe the Vietnam guy, hey, I don't want anything to do with you guys, all this and that, he's got some Agent Orange problems, and he's been encouraged to go get this done. He's having trouble, he can't figure out how to do it. A friend of him, he looks online, he looks somewhere, sees his lawyer that says, that you need help with this, I can help you. I'm going to charge you 30% the backside if you get what you get. that's silly in my mind, especially if the veteran can get it done for free. I know of a few lawyers that do that. I don't condone them for doing that. I think that they should just have to say, hey, you know, my services are very good, and I do charge for them, but you can get this done through MNDVA or through your local county veteran service officer.
Representative Carlson?
Yeah, I was just going to comment. My father happened to be a disabled vet from World War II, and there was a point where he needed some assistance relative to his disability payments, and I think it was the Disabled American Veterans or whatever that it's been a number of years. He's passed away a few years back, but he did get legal services. They were able to resolve the issues to his benefit at no charge. So,
good.
Colin.
And he was kind of, with all due respect, if there are any lawyers, you know, he was kind of that generation that, well, lawyers, he just, you know, because of the cost, he kind of liked to stay away from them. And even though at times they provide a good service, I don't mean to be negative toward lawyers, but he was just, that was his generation, you know, you were just very cautious about incurring legal fees. But they did it free of charge.
And Representative Detmer, did you want to add to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. How many here have met your county service officer? Okay. So your question was, something should come out of the county service officers' offices about these services that are available for
well, veterans? They should be putting that out in anyways. That's their job,
yeah,
is to get those benefits out there and to handle those claims or to help handle those claims. The thing that I'm pointing at is I just believe that there should be a disclaimer for, you know, people who charge for that service, whether it be a lawyer or perhaps someone that's no longer with any certain company but is still accredited through the American Legion and nationally. I think that they should have to say that.
Representative Carlson will correct me if I'm wrong on this, but we do a lot of disclaimers when it comes to home buying, so I can't imagine that this would be too big of a stretch to do it for services for the veterans too, but we've got research staff that is writing this down, so appreciate the feedback on that. So,
thank you.
Anybody else wishes to comment at all, or members wise? Representative Rumpet. Maybe we're going back to Helen here, but I'm wondering on the Vets Health Screening Program. I mean, health issues, especially as the population is aging, are a big deal. And I'm wondering how effective that program is, and, you know, is it in use? I mean, is it through the counties, or just how is that program run? And who is accessing it? Do you have any of that?
Ms. Roberts, do you want to comment on that, or is there anyone, one of the veterans that are here today, if they have feedback on that as well?
Madam Chair and Representative Rondeck, I would like to point out that was one of the items that was funded on a one-time
basis. One time?
I can reach out and find out. And it was also done when the department was in a different committee, so I'm not familiar with it, but I can look further for you.
Representative Rondeck,
all right. Well, thank you. It's interesting that it was one time. I mean, it obviously seems like there's some good benefit in some of these programs.
You know, Mr. Franton, on your comment too, I would hope that every veteran knows that their elected officials, state representatives, state senators, and whatnot, that we are here to help too. I know I had a constituent, he unfortunately suffered from Agent Orange exposure, and he had been having some problems with the federal side of coverage. And though I'm not a federal elected official, certainly we have a communication line with our congressional delegation and can help try and figure out some of those issues too. And I have another constituent too that's been having some healthcare issues as well. So we're here to help. I know a lot of people are hesitant to call their legislator. I don't know why. You'd call your city council member, so you might as well call your state representative too. But that's what we're here to do. So, any other questions or comments? Mr. Thule?
Yeah, Chair. First, as a host commander, I'd like to thank you all for coming out to us. Some of us are going to be seeing you about a month from now. That's on the Hill Day, March the 16th. There will not be probably as many as in previous years because it's harder for a lot of our older veterans to get out to the Cedar Street Armory. So we look forward to the construction being done, as I'm sure you guys do as well, so that we can get back up in the numbers that we'd like to see. And second, I don't know if it bears directly on this committee, but one of the things that this organization, as well as the American Legion here in Owatonna, and VFWs and Legions all across the state, one of the things that we do is, as you would see up front, is our charitable gambling. Mm-hmm. The proceeds from all of that go back directly back to our veterans and to our communities. I know over the past couple of years there have been some changes made in the tax rates of that charitable gambling. Seems unbelievable, but we are actually still paying for portions of the new stadium, I believe. So I would ask you to be sensitive to any changes that get made in the future. Any dollar that gets taken away from us is a dollar that's taken away from veterans support activities in our community. And ironically, I think that dollar is something that we're going to come back and ask you for state funding for. I know that you guys are in charge of the state veterans facilities. Just last night, we had representatives from the Hastings Veterans Home asking us for donation funding. You supply the funding to keep the buildings open, keep the lights on. We supply a lot of the funding for quality of life, entertainment, those types of things. So we really do work in partnership with you, and I would like to, I guess, just impress upon you that it may be an easy source of revenue when budget time comes around, but to try and leave our charitable gambling alone as much as possible.
And I'm glad you raised that issue. I serve on the Commerce Committee, and we go over some of those issues as well. There's several different committees that cover that territory. And it has been an issue of concern for many of us that serve on that committee. So I know that we've been looking at it. I think, Bob, you've had some experience on some of that, too. Representative Loon, I don't know if you've delved into that a little bit, too. So I appreciate you raising that issue, and I appreciate it. Just so you know, we appreciate it anytime you come to the Capitol. Your input and voice is critical, and I know it's a challenge. That's part of the reason that we decided to come out to Greater Minnesota. I grew up in a small town called Atwater, and going to the cities was a big deal for us, and it's not something you want to do on a day-to-day basis. So any way that we can try and get out to you and get your feedback, I think hopefully will help you. And it's a better communication between people that we serve and get that message back to St. Paul. So thanks for having us on that too. Members, any, or Representative Detmer?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And just about, I think it was 6 years ago that we passed the legislation for property taxes for like VFWs, American Legions. So if the amount of money that you donate into your community equals to your last year's property tax, you get a break on your property taxes. Are you aware of that?
Yes.
Okay. You know, sometimes the word doesn't get out there, and the facilities don't take part in that. Another thing is, on October 4th through the 8th, Minnesota, the Twin Cities, is going to be hosting the Medal of Honor Convention, where there's about 70-plus Medal of Honor winners are alive in America, and we expect about 50 of them to come to Minnesota for the convention. Last year it was in Boston, so it's going to be a big thing. They expect about 2,000 people to come into the Twin Cities for the Medal of Honor convention, and I think Minnesota has one Medal of Honor winner alive. He lives down in the southern part of the United States. We don't know if he's physically able to make it up here for that. We expect about 50 to come into Minnesota, October 4th through the 8th.
Okay, and Representative Nash?
Madam Chair, thank you. Thanks for everybody to come out. And you've got a pretty much a whole committee here that has a lot of ability to impact things for you. And just wanted to encourage you, there's no question that we don't want to hear from you. We'd love to have you ask questions. I don't think we're in any great time rush. So if you have a question, we would love to hear from you. I've seen folks sort of lean forward like they want to say something, but please do. We're here to listen, and we work for you.
I got one more question for you, sir. Reference to, it's been in the news, and you know, I've been working really, I've been able to keep track. What is the status now where they were talking about being able to simply give veterans a health card to where you can go down to the Mayo Clinic versus going up to the VA center up there in Minneapolis? Mm-hmm. Anybody have any update on that as far as where we're at?
Bob, any comments or Representative Albright? Or?
Well, I think you can go in to the VA, and I think you need your BD-214 documents, and you can get your card.
No, card. I'm saying, but would that allow you to use it? Yeah. Like right now, if I get right here to the Mayo Clinic, what happens is TRICARE is set up to where they say, okay, we cover 75%. Right? Whereas if I went up to the VA, it's 100% covered. And what the talk was, they were going to pass a bill to where it would be the same thing as going to the VA. You can go down right into the clinical seat.
Madam Chair, that's a federal. That's a federal.
Senator Franken is working on that legislation at the federal level. Okay, talk to your U.S. Senator.
How close are you following on this? Does anybody have any idea?
He's going to be in the state talking about these issues in a few weeks. So look for, if he's visiting close by, look for those listening sessions for him, and he can give you an update. But you can always call his office, and I can get you in touch with his assistant that covers health care and get an update.
We could actually, this is one
thing that the State Department of Veterans Affairs does is that tracks federal legislation. It's MDVA, Minnesota.gov, for our website. We actually have a legislation tracker both on the state and federal side. So we go into the legislative portion of that, and we actually sort of track the status of bills like that to try and give people an idea about where they're at, how close they are to getting somewhere. That particular one, I don't know its current status, but we try to, on at least every other week basis, update the federal legislation tracker so that folks have some understanding of what's going on with our congressional delegation.
And maybe, Mr. Johnson, maybe can you check back and connect with him, too, and
happy to do that.
Make it just easier so he doesn't have to track it down on the website. Thank you. Representative Albright?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, one of the observations that I've made for myself as I've gone to Post Command in Carter Lake and talked to the commander up there, and there's a frustration on his part in terms of just encouraging the newer veterans to come into the post, whether it be the Legion or the VFW. And so this is more of a question for the commander of this post in terms of, you know, what are you seeing? What initiatives are you undertaking to encourage veterans to participate in the functions here? I know there's a number of VFWs around the state that are closing due to lack of enrollment and subscription. I'm just trying to get some feedback in terms of appreciating what's going on with your post command. If it's different, what are you seeing, and what interplay? Because a lot of the communication with veterans comes through establishments like this, where they're sharing not only their stories of service rendered, but also service, to your point, about not getting things done in terms of after their service. And so I'm just wondering if there's any feedback that you can render to us in terms of what you're hearing, how can we help facilitate in whatever fashion is possible to encourage participation in these types of entities.
Representative, I guess the biggest challenge that the VFW and the Legion face today is getting those younger members both to become members and then to get them active and involved in the organization. The digital revolution has caused a lot of groups to spring up, small groups. use as an example a group called Operation Red, White, and Blue. They're Team Red, White, and Blue. They're organizations that are veteran-based, and they are more centered to doing activities in the community. They are not organizations that have a physical location like this. They're more social media-based. So that's probably the biggest challenge that we face. Anytime you see a statewide gathering of VFW or Legion members, there'll be conversations about the importance of Facebook and social media and reaching out to members that way. The other biggest challenge that we face is, and some of my Pulse members here will probably attest to, 30 years ago, going to a meeting at the VFW was a male veteran telling his family he would be gone for a few hours. My generation and younger, if I were to tell my wife I was leaving for a couple hours, she would probably have some things to say about that and encourage me to take the kids with so that she could have some quality time by herself. So being family friendly, not just for post functions, but for other functions as well, is a big challenge that we have. I think you'll see above you the smoke eaters that used to dominate this back hall for the age, not a decade past, where the VFW meeting and the receptions of the events that we hosted here were literally the smoke-filled back room. So we're fighting that perception, and we're trying to change and trying to stay relevant to the veterans that we're trying to serve.
Representative Albright.
I appreciate that feedback. You know, it's having a son in service right now, one of the things that I asked was, I mentioned to the post commander Prior Lake that my son was, you know, active duty, and he said, well, let me get his address and we'll sign him up for the subscription to the military magazine that they will support with the VFW, and we'll sponsor him for the, you know, his active duty. An encouragement that when he comes back, if he resides in the Prior Lake area, he'll become an active member. And I asked him about that, and the question is, well, why? You know, why? And it's kind of a nebulous question, because to some extent, you know, a veteran is taught during active duty to kind of rely upon himself and to be tough and to be resilient to the forces around him. So then you get him out of active duty, and all of a sudden, if you've got trouble or problems, now you're asking him to turn 180 degrees and divulge things that are going on in his life to his, you know, his service mates and ask for help, and that's kind of contradictory to his training. So I'm just wondering if you would have any response to that.
It is, and to your point, there are basically two areas that we would focus on in serving veterans. One is the immediate veterans in our community, taking care of their needs, making sure that veterans are living in acceptable housing. But then the other part of that is, and what the VFW and the Legion are much better equipped to do than some of the newer organizations that have sprung up, is we have a much easier time beating the ears of folks like you and holding your feet to the fire if promises are not kept, if the things that we believe that we deserve, that we've earned as veterans, if those things aren't forthcoming from the state and the federal level. It's hard to tell a 20-year-old veteran who just got back from a combat tour to join the VFW, because you need the VFW to fight for your benefits for you, because it's assumed that those things will always be there. It's assumed that if the government said they were going to give you something, that it will always be there. And I think it's the older generation, my generation and older, that know that if we don't constantly fight for those things, it's all too easy for veterans to be forgotten when it's 11:59 and the budget needs to be completed by midnight, and there's $1 million to be saved over here.
I see Mr. Johnson nodding his head in approval. I'm just wondering if you have any comment to follow up on that.
Sure. Professionally or personally?
Both.
So personally, I'm a veteran. I spent 6 years in the Navy, deployed twice to support Iraq, OEF, OIF. And when I got home from active duty, returned to Minnesota, joining a veteran service organization wasn't on the top of my priority list, because I thought, exactly like he's describing, these are benefits that are going to be available to me that they've been promised to me. I'm a veteran. They can't take that away from me. And not understanding the bigger picture, not understanding that there are organizations that are advocating for veterans from World War II through Afghanistan and Iraq, and not having a sense of what the collective use of an organization might be for me personally or for my the other veterans that I served with. And it's only through efforts of the VFW and the Legion educating veterans at the time of their discharge. They come home and meet with the veteran service or the county veteran service officer to understand what benefits are there. How do I buy a house? How do I get my college education paid for? How do I advocate for an issue that I'm passionate about, but that isn't something that's in legislation? So that transition is really important, catching someone at that point saying this is something you should consider and giving them some benefits. Professionally, it's an opportunity. From the flip side of that is to be the person helping veterans understand what benefits are out there and what they can be doing to help themselves and their communities. One of the questions was about education and employment, and what does the state do, or what does the federal VA do? There's some amazing programs at the state level in terms of compensating employers for taking on tradespeople to help them get their certifications. And that's something that I didn't know even existed. In a lot of cases, didn't exist until veteran service organizations were advocating for those benefits. It's very fulfilling for me to now be in a position to try and to turn that around and pay it back. And I think having a hearing in this location and asking questions, I think it's a fantastic way to sort of understand what issues are facing veterans and the groups advocating for them. So.
And Representative Petersburg, you said that you had some comments from a constituent that was unable to attend.
Yes, last night I met with a group in Wasika that are hoping to be one of the latest Yellow Ribbon communities in the state as well. But Jeremiah Miller was unable to come tonight, and he just inquired about two things that he thought might be a good idea. One of them is, could we have a box on the driver's license that indicates that they are a veteran, so that they wouldn't have to carry a veteran ID or military ID as well in regards to that. And so that may not be here, maybe going to public safety or whatever, but some of the comment that he suggested. And the other one was, he is an entrepreneur and a businessman himself, and he said it sure would be nice if there was some place online in which if you wanted to know the local veteran-owned organizations and businesses, there'd be some way of recording that. And so those are two items that he suggested as maybe something we could look at.
Mr. Branton, do you have?
Mr. Hinton.
Or Hinton. Yes. I keep saying Branton. I don't know.
No, it's okay.
Mr. Hinton.
What I would say that with Jeremiah's question about the veteran-owned businesses, so you have to go through the state in order to get your license, correct? How about on the state's website, Secretary of State's website, have a spot in there because you're getting everything from. So when you apply for it, say I'm a veteran-owned business, you supply your ED-214, and then you can look it up onto the state's website and say, hey, all these ones here, boom, I've got them. That'd be a pretty easy.
We've got notes on that. The other thing, too, that I wanted to mention, so we're in the process, you all have heard about the Real ID with the federal level, and we are in the process. We have a working group that is going through the process of determining what's Minnesota's version going to be of that. We have been one of the ones that didn't participate in it immediately, so we have 2 years to kind of work out a solution to that, and I don't know if we have any members that are part of that task force. Right. So do you want to comment? Can you comment to that? Do you think that that's something you can bring up to the task force as
an
opportunity to maybe look at?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. We just kind of got one meeting under our belt so far.
Both of them are great. Excellent. You got some great representatives then.
And we basically, we have plenty of time. We have until October 2020 to have everything implemented. So the idea is to get March 8th, that first week of session, to repeal the 2009 law that forbids us to even have our
legal staff and look at possibilities. So that'd be the first thing we're going to be doing. After that's open, then there's a kind of nice because of some newer technology. The reason it was not accepted 2009 is your privacy issues. There was a lot of concern of stolen driver's license, lead to all your social security numbers, your driver's license number, all those type of things. We've got some ideas floating around, nothing concrete yet, but that first week of session, I think we're going to be really hitting the ground running to comply with the federal standards. And the goal is to have everything done and voted on so that in, you know, you need your driver's license renewed every 4 years, that everybody would have a chance to renew it on their regular time schedule, and you wouldn't have to apply for it after 2 years or 3 years. You'd have to let it expire. We're hoping that'll work out in the first couple weeks of session. And that's something we could definitely put on the request, is to have that veteran's card implemented into the driver's license. That's an excellent idea.
Members, any other questions or the public?
I mean, it's kind of hard for
you to see. Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm curious on the ID question. I've had two different scenarios. One, you know, we know the extension for boarding an aircraft, but I was told by a constituent of mine who called me that it was his understanding to access certain federal property, which might impact on some of the people in this room, that it was already implemented, that you would have to have appropriate ID, and you're shaking your head yes, and so that clarifies that.
Madam Chair, that's also been thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Carlson, I've had a number of constituents who travel back and forth repeatedly to particularly Virginia and Maryland, where they're accessing Department of Defense installations. And it is very, very cumbersome. Without that real ID, so it's imperative that we square it away. But I think to Representative Daniels' comments, I think you know we've got some time. Even though it's cumbersome, we want to get it right the first go around. Particularly with you know if you have you know additional attachments to your driver's license, such as a CDL or a donor or something like that. Just as much as we have a number of license plates out there. I can see no reason why we wouldn't want to identify a veteran on his driver's license for the service rendered. I mean, it just makes sense. So, Mr. Cook, we'll be working on that.
I think that we also have, it was my understanding that the commander of each federal base, they have some flexibility too on who they allow on their base with their ID. So I do know that they have some flexibility, and I think it's up to each individual commander on how strict or how lenient they are on who comes on base. But Mr. Hinton, I didn't know if you wanted to comment on that, and then Representative Peter.
I apologize. It doesn't have to do with the issue of getting on base, but just for the veteran, identifying the veteran on the license. So we just had we partnered with Paul Montini to have de-escalation training in Muskogee County. And one of the things that we centered on was helping veterans that are in crisis at that time. One of the things that would be very helpful for a police officer to be able to pull someone over, see that this one is a veteran, and say, okay, well, I'm going to handle this a little bit differently than maybe I would in a different situation.
Yep. And that's huge. Yes. Did you have your hand raised, too?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. I was curious as to why you're putting an additional identifier on the license, okay? To me, as a veteran, I see it as I would want it on there, unless it was going to be able to be something, and I don't see it happening, that I could walk up to a military base, and that's an acceptable form of ID, and it's not. To me, all that is someone... Just as he said, I don't want a guy looking at me going, oh, well,